We'll hear the next case of United States v. Balance, 20-3141.
That is me. Okay. Back again. I don't know why I left. Are we okay?
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
I just want to make sure you're ready.
Oh,
okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. We'll hear from the appellant.
May it please the court, Kayla Gassman for this appellant, Kevis Balance. The evidence found in Mr. Balance's pocket during the stop and search on the sidewalk should have been suppressed. Whatever version of the 911 call that this court accepts, there was not sufficient reasonable suspicion to detain Mr. Balance. The Hibbett Sports employee's call to 911 reported a conclusory allegation that a crime had been committed at a different store at a different time, with no firsthand knowledge of the criminal activity and no details at all about the suspected criminal activity.
Well, there was a there were two comments that were interesting, but by the district court. One was that the individual that went to the Newton Hibbett store matched the description of the person who was providing the counterfeit funds at the other Hibbett store, but there was also a finding that the individual returned shoes that had been purchased with counterfeit funds, and that is slightly different. You know, if I return merchandise to any merchant, you know, they're going to say, okay, well, if they give me credit, they'll say, okay, well, we don't need to see your credit card. Well, we have a record of that. We know how it was purchased, and they'll credit that credit card. And so that's the finding that I'm a little concerned about from your standpoint, is the finding that the item that the Hibbett shoes were purchased with counterfeit funds. How do you argue that that is that's inadequate for a Terry stop?
So I have two different arguments about that. So first, I do think that was a clearly erroneous finding by the district court, which I'll address. But I also think what's missing from that, even if the court accepts that that was part of the report in the 911 call, that what's missing is how they know that those shoes are purchased with counterfeit currency. So we don't, the call still is reporting a crime at another store, right? When the shoes were originally purchased.
Maybe it was at this store. You know, well, if I return something, I mean, I understand you argue that it's clearly erroneous, but if it is to be credited, then someone did return an item that had been purchased with counterfeit funds. And so I'm not sure that that would not constitute a distinct crime apart from the actual purchase at the other store.
So I still think that report lacked details. So we're assuming like, oh, that there's all of these facts that come with trying to return a pair of shoes that have been purchased with counterfeit currency, but we don't know how they identified that the shoes were purchased with counterfeit currency. And there's no description of who made that determination and how they knew that. So those, I think, are the gaps if we accept that finding. But I do think that finding by the district court was clearly erroneous. And here's why. So there are two different officers who testify to different versions of what the 911 call, dispatch report provided about the 911 call from the store. So Officer Shell was the initial officer who responded, and he testified repeatedly that what was reported is that the person in the Newton store matched the description of someone who had previously passed counterfeit currency at another store. Though that, I think, has obvious problems in it, and that it's reporting secondhand knowledge. We don't know how that person even knew about the previous counterfeiting. We don't have a description of the counterfeiter. We don't know how the people in the store linked the person in the Newton store to the previous counterfeiting incident. Then it was Officer Winslow, who was the second officer, who testified. And he actually testified to multiple different versions of what he thought the call said. So at one point he testified, fairly consistent with Officer Shell, that he thought it reported that the clerk in the store thought the person in the Newton store had been involved in other counterfeiting at a different store. So that's one version. Then he testified that the call reported that the person in the Newton store had actually passed counterfeit currency in the Newton store. That's a second version. Nobody else reported that that happened in the Newton store. That was clearly just either a misremembering or he didn't recall very well what it said. No one else said that happened in the Newton store. The third version was then when the prosecutor specifically led him and asked him, did you know that the person in the Newton store was returning shoes purchased with counterfeit currency? Then he said yes. But then when the district court pushed him and asked him some questions and pushed him on some of these discrepancies, Officer Winslow said, oh, actually, I was busy. I was booking a suspect into jail during the dispatch report, so I didn't hear it very well, and I don't remember very well what it said. And then he said, well, maybe I didn't hear that information about the shoes from the dispatch report. I might have heard it from some other source.
But I also, but he added the last clause, which is, but I found it out before I had contact with Mr. Balance.
Correct. But the problem, why I think that is a clearly erroneous finding for the district court to accept that, is there's no evidence that he did any other investigation prior to stopping Mr. Balance.
I don't understand the logic of that. Now, of course, I think you're right about that. There was no evidence of any additional investigation. But the problem is, if he says, you know, I don't remember if it was an additional investigation. Now, there was no additional investigation. Or it was the information from the dispatch. But what I do know is that it was before I said, hey, bud, turn around. I want to talk to you, Kevin. And if that's the case, then why does it matter if there was no additional investigation? Because we still have a finding that we have to, at least right now, view as most favorable to the government, that he did say that whatever it was, it was before I told him to turn around.
I recognize this gets very facty and gets very complicated, but it's also clearly erroneous to expect that he did know that before he stopped Mr. Balance, because we have Officer Schell's different testimony about what the call said, that the person in the Newton store matched the description. There was nothing about shoes in what Officer Schell testified that the call said. So I think that is the most, on a reading of the record as a whole, that's the most credible version of what the call said. So it's not in the call, and there's no other investigation.
Can I just stop you, though? They're not supposed to be finding the best reading of it, right? We're not applying that standard, which is what you just said. The best reading of what, you know, all the facts is your reading. Can you frame it in how this is clear, like this couldn't possibly,
right,
or applying the best standard?
Yes, I accept that. Obviously I know that's not the standard, but there's no record evidence supporting what the district court found in terms of that Officer Winslow knew before he stopped Mr. Balance about this issue.
He knew.
Because he said he knew, but then he said he didn't know where he learned it from. I don't think the record supports that he learned it from the call, because we have Officer Schell's version, and then also the questions that Officer Schell and Officer Winslow ask both the driver, Mr. Richard, and Mr. Balance, are about matching the description or passing counterfeit bills. Nobody asks them about the shoes, even after seeing shoes in the car. They don't say, the store said you were trying to return those shoes and those had been purchased with counterfeit. I don't think it's logical to assume that they would not ask about the shoes if they actually had this information before they detained Mr. Balance, that they didn't ask him about the shoes. So I think the record just doesn't support Officer Winslow's testimony at all, either that the call reported that this information about the shoes or that he knew about the shoes prior to the stop. I think it's most likely that he learned about that fact later in the investigation, but not prior to stopping Mr. Balance.
Can we talk about what if we agree with you that was a clearly erroneous finding by the district court here? You still have an anonymous caller who's not truly anonymous. They know where the call came from. They can follow up. You have a caller who lacks motivation to lie for any particular reason. So don't we give that caller some veracity based on those circumstances? And can we assume that this caller, when they reported that the individual matched an individual who had passed counterfeit bills at another store, was telling the truth?
So I am not particularly challenging the reliability of the caller. But the caller can reliably report what they saw in the Newton store, but it still is not sufficient for reasonable suspicion because it doesn't sufficiently describe what the criminal activity was. So the, on, On the call that we're talking about, if you accept my argument that the other finding was clearly erroneous, Officer Schell's testimony that the call said the person in the Newton store matched the description of someone who passed counterfeit currency somewhere else. We don't know when that happened. We don't know where it happened. We don't know precisely what
happened.
When
the currency was
passed. Yeah, exactly. When the counterfeit currency was passed, we don't know when or where that actual crime.
Can we infer from the person making the call that there was some immediacy to all of that?
I don't think we can because we don't know. We don't even know how they knew that. We don't know how the employee in the Newton store even knew about the previous counterfeiting incident. We don't know who witnessed it. I think there are some versions of that would make it very... That would make this a very different case if we had the details, but we don't have the details. The caller didn't have firsthand knowledge and they didn't tell us who did witness it. They didn't tell us any details about the incident, the actual counterfeiting incident. They didn't have a description of the counterfeiter in the previous incident, or if they did, they didn't provide it. And what I think is also key is they didn't describe how they matched the person in the Newton store to the previous counterfeiter. The only description that we have of the person in the Newton store is that it was a black male wearing a white shirt and
jeans.
But
we also know from the district court record, do we not, that the individual was not only a black man in a white shirt and blue jeans, but he was 5'8" and weighed 245 pounds. And that is a fairly unusual description. Now, Belli hasn't argued that, but we have the capability of affirming an alternative ground based on the district court record, and isn't that borne out by the district court record?
I don't recall that finding, but I believe, Your Honor, that it's there.
Was there evidence in the district court record in the suppression hearing that he was 5'8" and 245 pounds?
I think what we would need is that was reported at the time so that the officers knew it when they made the stop. And that it's still unclear if that description, what the description was of the actual counterfeiter in the previous incident, we just don't know. Were those details given? Were additional details given? We just don't know. So that it's that gap between how they're linking the person in the Newton store to the previous counterfeiter that's missing. So it's not just that they can identify that the information that the caller is providing can identify the person who was in the Newton store. They also have to give sufficient detail and sufficient information to actually create reasonable suspicion that that person was involved in criminal activity.
Can I ask one follow-up question? And I don't want to monopolize time, but when Winslow questions Mr. Richard, we know from Mr. Richard that he says that the other fellow, Kevin, was the one to go in and return the shoes. And we know from Mr. Richard, from what he tells Mr. Winslow, that they wouldn't take the shoes. He sees the shoes, Officer Winslow, in the athletic shoes in the car. And then Richard confirms that those are the shoes that Kevin had tried to return to the Hibbett store. So what we do know, prior to the time of the seizure of Mr. Balance, the time that Winslow confronts Balance, we know, he knows, Winslow knows, that this fella did try to return shoes. They turned him away. They thought, for whatever reason, that it was counterfeit. And so we know all of those things. And then what we arguably don't know is specifically how the 911 caller knew that these were the shoes that had been purchased with counterfeit funds, except what I started by, which is just common sense. Every merchant knows how something has been purchased. Otherwise, they'll never know whether to give you credit for it. And so Winslow knew all of those things, even under your version of the facts, before he confronted Balance.
So let me answer this and reserve a little time for rebuttal. So they didn't know why he wasn't able to return the shoes. So the actual reason he couldn't return the shoes wasn't because that they identified them as being purchased with counterfeit money. It was because he didn't have an appropriate ID. The store requires an identification with an address on it to do a return. It wasn't that they identified the shoes at that point as counterfeit or fraudulent transactions. There could be many other reasons why you can't make a return. You don't have the receipt. You don't have the credit card that was used. Whatever documentation the store requires you to be able to do a return, you don't have it, you can't do a return. So just not being able to do the return doesn't indicate any involvement in criminal activity. Doesn't sufficiently indicate involvement in criminal activity to create reasonable suspicion. Let me just reserve my last minute for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good Good morning. I'm Alan Metzger, and I happen to be the AUSA that handled the case below. Your Honor, the defendant's attack upon the phone call, frankly, is misplaced. They want to say there's not sufficient details in the phone call, the 911 call, to stop Mr. Balance. The problem and the reason that attack is misplaced is because there are a slew of additional facts that occur after the 911 call. In addition to that, in judging the credibility of Officer Corporal Winslow and weighing the evidence as presented by Corporal Winslow, the court was also required to look at the totality of the evidence presented before it, which included the information of Officer Shell. And was there sufficient corroboration between what Officer Shell testified to and what Corporal Winslow testified to? The district court weighed that evidence. The district court judged the credibility of each of those witnesses to make its findings a fact. That's the sole role for the district court in this matter, which is why this court is supposed to defer to the historical findings of fact and the rational inferences that can be drawn from that. So what we have is an undisputed call from 911. It's made from Hibbett Sports. It's made by a Hibbett Sports employee who reports to 911 that a person who has tried to return some shoes or some items to the Hibbett store in Newton, Kansas, that had previously been purchased with counterfeit currency, and that the person trying to return it matched the description of the purchaser.
Just to make sure that I completely understand what the testimony was, you mentioned two things, and I think that you're right about the second. I question whether you're right about the first. I don't think the 911 caller said that those shoes had been purchased with counterfeit funds. Am I wrong about that? The judge found that, but I don't think that was the testimony.
I think you may be right there, Your Honor. Okay. And so that call is made, but that is not the reason that Mr. Balance was stopped. All that does is it sets the process in motion, because Officer Shell then begins looking for a black Nissan vehicle headed north on Main Street and headed north of Hibbett Sports, looking for a vehicle with a specific tag. He sees a black Nissan, pulls into the parking lot where it is, but he does not stop the Nissan. The Nissan stops on its own to get gas.
Okay, can I just stop you?
Yes.
And I'm only speaking for myself.
Certainly.
But it seems to me that if the question is whether there was reasonable suspicion to think that this Mr. Balance was an occupant of this Nissan, and that this is exactly the same vehicle, the same guy, and the black man in white t-shirt and blue jeans that the 911 caller said, I think it would be open and shut. But I don't think that's the issue. Now, so this is, to be clearly, the fella that the 911 caller thought was involved in some fashion with returning merchandise that had been purchased with counterfeit funds. But therein lies the question, what evidence was there to support reasonable suspicion that this guy either did return shoes that had been purchased with counterfeit funds, or that he matched the description, other than he is one of the millions of guys that wears a white shirt and blue jeans and is black?
Okay. When Officer Shell first pulls up behind the vehicle, behind the Nissan, as it's getting gas, Officer Shell notices the person who turns out to be Mr. Balance, walk by him, and as he walks by, he looks away. The this court has in supplemental volume 2, I believe, the disc, which will show that. He looks away. So there are inferences that the law enforcement officer can draw from that. He then begins his consensual encounter with Mr. Richard. And when Mr. Richard said he needs to wants to get his ID from the vehicle, he opens it up, and the officer sees the bag with Hibbett Sports shoes. And he says, what are those? And Mr. Richard says, those are the shoes that he, referring to Mr. Balance, was trying to return. And there are questions about, you know, purchases, et cetera. When do they got them? Did they get them that day? And Richard says, no, we bought them yesterday and at another Hibbett store. So that is consistent with the information that was provided in them. Then they go on and Officer Shell begins to ask some questions about possible counterfeiting transmission of counterfeit, passing counterfeit taking place at the store at Hibbett's and Newton. Officer Winslow then arrives on the scene and they have some conversations and he speaks to the defendant and he immediately starts talking to the defendant, to Mr. Richard. He immediately begins, and Mr. Richards begins referencing the, or referring to, hey, if you want to, if there's counterfeit going on, you need to talk to them, etc. But he confirms that Mr. Balance was the person that went into the store to try and return the shoes. Now, in addition to that, Mr. Richard has told
officers... That was with Officer Winslow present?
Yes, that was to Officer Winslow. Yeah, there are two officers. And in fact...
But I guess I'm still... I'd like to take you back because I'm still stuck on this whole issue about the testimony from the two different officers that was all over the place about what the dispatch said. Unfortunately, we don't have a transcript of that dispatch, so the district court could only rely on what these officers said. And it seems to me that the first officer, he didn't remember the dispatch said anything about shoes being returned. So we gotta rely on the arresting officer Winslow's knowledge of that call. And his testimony also was all over the place and entirely inconsistent. And I don't see how resolved.
I would disagree that it's entirely inconsistent.
Okay.
There are internal inconsistencies.
Well, first he said, I recall that a male had been there. He had made some comments about possible returning property that he had tried to use what the employee at the store believed to be counterfeit currency. Then he said he didn't remember where he got that information, whether he got it from the dispatch call, but he did say he knew by the time he went to contact the defendant that that was part of his understanding. But how do we know that was part of his understanding?
Okay.
How do we know that he knew anything about the shoes or the dispatch about shoes at that point?
Because Sentencing Hearing Exhibit 5, which is the transcript, clip 1, from Corporal Winslow's video, body cam, starts with Officer Winslow stated to Mr. Richard, so you guys went to Hibbett Sports, but you didn't go in. Is that what I'm understanding?
Okay.
And Mr. Richard responded, he did. He went in to return some stuff, but they said he couldn't return the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Corporal Winslow knew that Mr. Balance had gone into the store in an attempt to make a return.
At that point.
And that is before he's made contact with Mr. Balance. That is the initial, that's clip 1 of the initial stop. That is in addition to the defendant, Mr. Balance, when he walks by the police officer, ducking his head away. That is in addition to Mr. Richard telling the officers, we bought that stuff yesterday, and those are the shoes that he tried to return. So in addition to the information coming from the 911 call, the officers are beginning to build a factual scenario. Now, it may not have been sufficient for probable cause, but that's not the standard here. The probable cause is, was there a reasonable suspicion?
At the time he was stopped.
At the time Balance was stopped.
Right, Balance was stopped.
And so Corporal Winslow knew all of these facts before. In addition to that, while Corporal Winslow is speaking with Mr. Richard, Officer Shell walks in front of his vehicle up to the front of the gas station, as you can see in the tapes, and says something to the effect to Mr. Richard, hey, your boy's leaving you. He's leaving you out to hang. That is an additional fact that Corporal Winslow could employ, because he and Shell both knew that the defendant, Mr. Balance, was expected to return to his vehicle. So when the police arrive on the scene, not only does he duck his head, but he then walks away from the scene in an attempt to evade discovery. So when you have all those facts cascading upon the 911 call and the whatever information was provided in the 911 call, the government would submit that there's reasonable suspicion, and that would be consistent with what the court found. Because, as you noted, the court found that there was some specificity, there was an identification. We know that Mr. Balance was the person referenced by the store employee, because they saw him get into this black Nissan. He's identified by Mr. Richard. I mean, you start having a cascading series of events that leads up to the point in time when your boy's leaving you. He's leaving you out to hang. Corporal Winslow then asked Officer Shell, do you want me to go get him or do you want to get him? And the decision is for Corporal Winslow to go get him. And then we get into the issue with the, he stops him. Hey, bud, come and talk to me. And then we have the issue with whether or not there was a voluntary consent, which the government submits that there was, because as the court found, and as you can see from the video, Corporal Winslow may have been firm, but he was not threatening. He wasn't yelling. He never touched his gun.
Well, he tells him what to do, and then he tells him he's a liar.
Yeah, tells him a lot, but that's trying to develop his story. But again, that's different. He doesn't ask for permission to search until the defendant reaches his hand into his pocket. And if you watch the video, you'll be able to see he does reach his hand into his pocket. Corporal Winslow says, hey, don't do that. Immediately follows that up with, do you mind if I look? And I don't remember the exact words, but do you mind if I look or if I search? And immediately, without hesitation, Mr. Balance says, go ahead. He reaches in, finds the initial $50 counterfeit currency, and the rest is history. Any additional questions?
Well, Counsel, what's the relationship between the first question and the second question? If we find against you on the Terry stop, what happens to the voluntariness analysis, if anything?
Well, if you find that there was not a reasonable, articulable suspicion that criminal activity was afoot, the stop is void, because the stop has to be legitimate from initiation. If you find that there was not a reasonable suspicion on the part of the officer, I lose.
So we don't have to reach voluntary.
You would not have to reach it because it falls. It has to fall.
Do you have any more else?
No, I'm good.
All right, thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
I have just a couple of brief points. So if the call, I don't think the record supports that the call reported the allegation about the counterfeit shoes. If the call didn't report that allegation, then the all we have is a conclusory allegation about an incident at a different store at a different time with no details. Richard's statements corroborate only that Mr. Valance was in the Newton store. They don't corroborate anything about criminal activity. Simply going to a store and not being able to do a return does not indicate that the item was purchased with counterfeit currency. That is, in Officer Winslow says that he knew that. He doesn't know how he learned it. There's no support that he could have learned it through any other investigation prior to the stop. So if it wasn't in the call, and I think the record supports that it was not in the call, then it is clearly erroneous to accept that his testimony that he did know it, because the record simply doesn't support it. And without that, I don't think there was reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Valance.
I have one question. How do you respond to your adversary's argument that in the transcript of the stop, the video, that Mr. Richard tells Officer Schell that, yes, though that's the stuff that had been purchased yesterday. Well, he just says, yeah. When Officer Schell asks, is that the stuff that you all had bought yesterday in Wichita? And he says, yeah. So we do know, at least prior to the encounter with Mr. Valance, that Mr. Schell had told Officer Schell that these athletic shoes had been purchased the day before at another store in Wichita, right?
Right. We know. So that's my point is, Mr. Richard's statements corroborate that Mr. Valance was in the Newton store, and they say that he was trying to do a return. But his statements don't indicate that Mr. Valance was trying to do the return because he purchased the shoes with counterfeit currency. They also don't indicate that the store didn't do the return because the shoes were purchased with counterfeit currency. In fact, the reason he couldn't do the return was because he didn't have an ID with an address on it, which is what Hibbets requires to do a return. So just the bare fact of purchasing shoes and trying to return them does not tie Mr. Valance sufficiently to counterfeiting to create reasonable suspicion to stop him.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This matter will be submitted.